You know, that's advanced treated wastewater.
Yeah.
That was just a handout.
It's just to show you what the bottles will look like. It wasn't to drink.
Do you have the antidote?
What am I supposed to say?
You just say that they're directly in the staff.
All right, we have to pause for a moment while...
While you get the antidote.
While he gets the antidote for the... Reconvening in open session. Roll call. Oh, I have to report on the action. We gave direction to staff to proceed with some communication.
That's correct.
Here we go. Roll call.
Yes, Toronto.
Here.
Toronto is here. Mr. First.
Here.
Mr. Borstein.
Here.
Commissioner Gaffney.
Here.
Commissioner Bushy.
Here.
And Commissioner DiGiovanni.
Here.
This is the time for open period for public participation. If there's anyone in the audience who wishes to address the board on matters under our jurisdiction but which are not on our agenda, now is the time. There being none, we'll move on. We have the consent calendar. Anyone?
Item A.
Pull A.
I have a correction for item number 2. Minutes. I was not late at the last meeting.
You weren't here.
I was here.
No, what did you want to correct?
That it says he arrived after the consent calendar.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, so you can't. Okay. So let's have a vote on B through I.
Was it Doug Kelly that arrived late?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay, we could make that adjustment.
So as corrected,
yes.
In the ad.
Well, it's not, it's a correction?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was Tom Kelly, not me.
Oh, well, that's what I said, and I thought you said, no, I was here. Okay.
Right, so the name on here needs, on this note,
oh,
in the minutes, needs to be corrected.
And as corrected, I'd be happy to move the consent calendar.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay. And there's a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Sorry about that. The first item on the agenda is Base Bay Area Biosolids to Energy Coalition Lead Agency. Do we want to... We don't have anybody in the audience for this, do we?
No.
Why don't we go straight to 9 and come back to 8?
Would you remember?
Go to 10, you mean?
10.
Go to 10 and... Yeah. Okay, should I go out and come back in?
Again.
I don't know.
We'll
start again here. Let's go to Tim.
Reboot.
Reboot, right. Jason, will you take us into 10 and let us not forget to go back to 9?
Okay. My pleasure. So, as you know, LAFCO is developing and preparing a Central Marin Wastewater Study. And they started this work in 2015, excuse me. I got problems too.
After it's contagious.
So, between end of 2015 when they started the study work up and now CMSA has been, you know, actively involved at certain levels. First, you know, LAFCO sent out a detailed, you know, questionnaire, you know, requesting a lot of comprehensive information from the agency and various aspects of our business and services and other things of that nature. We provided that to LAFCO. We also were approved by the board to serve as CMSA's representative on a technical advisory committee. And we've had, you know, several meetings with LAFCO, primarily last year where we looked at, you know, the plan of study. We looked at population projections. We looked at various performance measures that they were proposing. We also have reviewed several drafts of the agency's profile and provided, you know, comments to LAFCO. Attached to the staff report is one of the comment letters that we sent back in December.
Of 2016.
Yeah. And that was the three main areas that we thought were significant in the agency profile that should be revised and updated pertain to the agency's, you know, capacities related to peak weather events. They talk about, you know, peak daily events in there. but not peak hourly or what we call peak events. So it represents that we have a lot more capacity during these peak events than we actually have. Then also a lot of the financial metrics use depreciation from our audited financial statements, which, as you know, is an accounting calculation, and it's not something that we actually budget for and fund depreciation. But in the agency profile, by using that expense, it looks as if that we're not bringing enough revenue in to cover our expenses. And then also the term of the study is through the end of 2014. So we thought, you know, so the information in the study was more accurate and reflective of our current business and operations, that it should be through end of 2015 or 2016, and we could provide, you know, that information pretty quickly. I had talked with Mr. Keene Simons, the executive director of LACCO, who's in the audience here, about this, and he said that most of those will be addressed, you know, in the next revision of the agency profile before the final study has been adopted by the commission. So before you tonight, which we sent out in the agenda packet in those nice binders, is the draft study that was reviewed or presented to the LAFCO Commission back at their April meeting. And they initially set a comment deadline date of May 30th. And then the GPA managers and I requested an extension of that. And Mr. Simon said it seemed reasonable, and he said that it'll likely be extended until June 30th, but he'll need to get the support of the commission on that. And I'm not quite sure what the status of that is. So that's my staff report. So I'll turn it over to Keene.
Well,
thanks for being here.
Wonderful. So just following up on Jason's very kind introduction, again, Keene Simons from LAFCO. And those who were here just about, I think it was November of 2015, I came before you, and I introduced our then new analyst, Rachel Jones, and I said, by way of our own commission's doing, we've calendars a study that we're going to start work on this. Study that now you have, I believe, at least the executive summary in your packets. And let me just offer up a few premising comments, and I'm really here to answer any immediate questions you may have. But before getting to that, you know, LAFCO is an interesting entity, okay? We're regional planners, but sometimes the legislature has us do things that sometimes go a little bit beyond, you know, your typical planning exercises, like preparing a study on, in this case, a utility system, a wastewater system. So the entire document is premised on this idea that regional planning meeting up with a kind of an engineering aspect. So the document's going to look different from a lot of the documents your staff would produce, because at the end of the day, what LAFCO is trying to accomplish in this document is the connection of dots between what we see as growth and development projections over the next 5 to 10 years in all of the affected communities, and then match that up against the demands and capacities of the collection systems that are in the Las Galinas, San Rafael, and Ross Valley watersheds, and then also the treatment capacities that your entity has, as well as Las Galinas, and then try to deduct some reasonable comments about where are the infrastructure needs or deficiencies relative to that relationship, our own, again, growth and development projections and how they match up, and then ultimately the state wants us to weigh in on governance options. And one of the increasing issues that the legislature has asked of us, in fact, they're doing a hearing right now by way of the Little Hoover Commission right now in Sacramento, is what is LAFCO doing to at least encourage the review of more functional or even political consolidations? So in the report, you'll see some topics covered that tackle the issue of consolidations, again, functional or political. It's not because we want to be provocative. It's just that's the interest of the legislature in having an oversight body. I prepared what I hope is a handy, you know, kind of cheat sheet, if you will, a two-page summary of what this document concludes and then some of the takeaway recommendations. At the end of the day, let me just offer up that LAFCO has looked at these seven agencies, and we have our map of the seven agencies on the first page. And there are no red flags, okay? And if there were, trust me, LAFCA would be more than happy to say that. So all of the agencies, certainly are in good shape relative to the core issues that LAFCA focuses on, which is, are you okay financially? Do you have the capacities to at least meet existing demands? And can you meet demands that we project over the next 5 to 10 years? All of that is checked off, if you will. So with that in mind, the things that we have flagged, I would say none of them rise to the level of concerning to us, but they are things that, for LAFCA we think about, whether it be the governance setup of CMSA, whether it be how to improve accountability with respect to San Rafael Sanitation District and the members of the appointment process, to then, the nuts and bolts about how boundary lines have kind of evolved, in particular in Ross Valley. One of the things that this document shows is that there's probably a good reason for LAFCO and some of the affected agencies to sit down and make sure that the boundary lines actually match up to service commitments. It's not uncommon that sometimes there's disconnects, and through some test case samples, we realize there are some areas that need to be better perfected. Let me pause there and offer up a couple of responses to Jason had mentioned, where we are in the process. So, yes, we brought our the draft report to the commission in April, and yes, we originally asked or established, I think, a 45-day public comment period. Jason asked, and it was a reasonable request for some additional time. So by way of the chair, we've already approved the extension all the way through June 30th. So you have all that time to review the document and then provide comments to LAFCO. Both Jason probably is best suited to offer up the technical observations from staff's perspective, but then from the board, are there other policy issues that either you take issue with that we flagged or things that we have not identified that you think are a blind spot in the document? All of that input is certainly welcome. My expectation is that in August, August 10th, our next meeting after June, we will then have a final document with probably some revisions. For example, Jason has been very consistent about his thoughts about depreciation. I hear you, and I think we're going to work on that section. And so there will be some changes. But the core recommendations that you see probably are going to stand. And again, unless there's some good information that comes back that allows us to rethink our conclusions. But let me just highlight the big recommendation, which is LAFCA staff, notionally at least, through this document, sees that there are some benefits to further validate the idea of regionalization of wastewater services in the Ross Valley, San Rafael watersheds. Now, what does that mean? That means that based on the directives that LAFCO has, enough check marks suggest that this is something that LAFCO should independently look at. Now, I get that whether it's been CMSA or Ross Valley, that individual agencies have looked at this question before, and I think they've done a good job, but they've also looked at it through the agency perspective. LAFCO has a different perspective by way of regional growth management that I think we have an obligation to pursue. So one of the recommendations we have in that document is, Commission, we think the test has been met that you should greenlight additional resources so we can fully evaluate what are the options in terms of perhaps consolidations, whether, again, functional or political, and then do those options have enough merit to overtake some demerits? And we know that there are going to be demerits to that process. For example, not all of the systems are equally funded. Not all of the systems have the same level of service. So one of the questions that I know some of our commissioners have even asked is, how can we proceed through a consolidation effort and study, knowing that one area may be at a disadvantage versus another one if you force a marriage together. That's something certainly that we hear, and I think our pledge at staff level is not to prejudge whether the consolidation would work, but to offer up an independent assessment saying, here are your options, community and agencies. Here what we think are the merits. Here what we think are the demerits. What say you? And there's no necessarily assumption that we would then proceed with anything more than that baseline information that comes from LAFCO. At the end of the day, LAFCO's got 65 local governmental agencies that we're tasked with reviewing every 5 years, so we've got a lot on our plate. If the commission says we've got enough to study, move on, staff will be happy with that direction as well. But again, the message I want to convey is it's not that we see there being an explicit problem with the setup of the collection systems and the one wastewater treatment provider in the Ross Valley, Centerfield Basin, but I think our duty is to at least provide an independent take whether or not an alternative would be better. So let me just pause there. Again, if you've had a chance to read this weighty document, great. I appreciate you may have only been able to skim it to date as well. I'd be happy to come back at another meeting if there was a desire for more dialogue, and hopefully I'd bring the actual preparer of the report, who unfortunately was unable to come tonight. So questions, observations, comments you would like to convey to my commissioners?
All right, Diane.
Thank you. I thought this was the study, and I'm a little confused that two of your recommendations are to look further into things. I understand maybe a little reorganization. I'm sorry. Recommendation number 7,
mm-hmm.
Initiate reorganizations of the Murphy Park and San Quentin Village. You know what? That's kind of a separate issue. It's number 8 that really puzzles me.
Mm-hmm.
It states in your summary sheet, the commission should commit additional resources to independently evaluate reorganization options. I thought that's kind of what this was, and I thought we were going to be done with it after this whole process. And I'm a little disappointed that this appears to be an almost endless process. I would also like to ask how you would envision any future recommendation to potentially consolidate. Would it go to the voters ultimately, like it did down in Southern Marin? I think I had asked you that question maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'd asked somebody, and anyway, I just can't believe we're back almost not to square one, but we're talking about this again.
But I agree. I thought we were going to be a lot further along to just look at these, two little districts and focus on Larkspur and the county commission, the supervisor. I mean, it's like.
Well, if I could respond, in order to do a consolidation review, you first have to, under state law, produce a municipal service review to establish a baseline of information. That's what this document primarily sets out to do. Now, certainly, as part of this exercise, the commission could tell us, we want you to keep going and fully evaluate the options, the merits and demerits therein, of consolidation opportunities in this region. That is an option before the commission. My recommendation going through this process is just trying to put together that type of analysis, and that includes looking at the employment labor agreements and all the things that go into it, is not an easy task. And what we've learned from our Southern Marin experience, and that was a painful experience for Marin LAFCO, is we have to be right out of the gate. Because once we produce a report, it's out there, and no matter how many revisions we do, the initial document is going to be what we're going to stand for or be judged against. So my comment to the commission is, let's pause. And I understand that might be upsetting, but let's pause. Let's take in this document that we've produced to date, and if you're interested in doing the next phase, well, then you're going to need to green light X amount of resources for staff to not only do the work, but also bring in some consultants for peer review. They may well decide to do that as part of our next work study, which begins July 2017. That's up to them. It's a budget decision almost. But I would feel it would be a disservice to the community and agencies if we just jump to a conclusion about the merits or demerits of consolidation. I appreciate it's a long process, but...
So I got lost in who needs to greenlight these resources.
The commission, LAFCO.
The LAFCO commission.
Yes.
Not us.
Right.
Okay. No.
Okay.
Unless you want to pay for it.
No, I want to make sure that it was crystal clear that we won't. just checking.
Yeah. And that's part of the challenge of, you know, all LAFCOs, right? We have this task. We have a set amount of money. We do our best in allocating the money and the resources to studies. What we have felt, and this is my recommendation to the commission, that produce a document that at least establishes the baseline of technical information. Yes, and through Jason, you know, staffs have some disagreement about what performance measures we should prioritize and things of that nature. But the goal here is to create a document that is the source going forward. Whether that is in 2 months, we just start working on a consolidation review, or I think more likely the item gets put on pause longer than that and more resources are budgeted probably at least into the 18-19 fiscal year.
Yes. I know that staff usually makes a recommendation about budgeting for things like this. What will be your recommendation to the commission?
That we not include a consolidation study in 17-18.
Thank you.
Because?
Relative to the other priorities that the commission has established, I don't see enough of a red flag here to say let's invest our limited resources. Again, there's two-person office relative to everything else. Now, that said, if the agencies come forward and say, no, you know, indirectly, all of you are funding agencies, and you say, no, we want you to prioritize this resource, that will have great weight on the commission's decision-making. But I think what I have heard in the, in what I think the commission has conveyed is, we think that this is something we should look at, but we also don't have a stammering of people from the public saying, you know, spend money on this and research it. That's not the message to date that we've heard.
What are your top three priorities for you, that you'll be recommending?
Study-wise, Novato region, and there is a study for our friends down south with respect to the wastewater, revisiting the wastewater issue there.
When you say Novato?
The Novato region as a whole.
Wastewater? Wastewater?
No, 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 a general services study of Novato,
oh, okay.
Which would include Belmarine Keys, and it parallels their general plan update.
I had to look up a word I didn't know. I'd never seen it used in this context. Sorry, I was looking for my dictionary. Michael, do you want to ask any questions or make any observations?
Well, you know, before I knew anything, before I got onto these different boards, I thought consolidation really seemed like ultimately a good idea. And now I'm more in favor of the other C word, cooperation between agencies, which we weren't able to do several years ago because we were busy suing everybody. We weren't really talking to anybody, but we've all gotten to the point now where I think we've got tremendous working groups together, and I think functional consolidation, which I will interpret as cooperation, big-time cooperation, which we've never done before, where we can utilize each other's strengths, where, for instance, if Ross Valley has a spot repair unit, where we can go out and very, very quickly take care of a problem in San Rafael or in Corte Madera, and help each other out in that kind of a way. We all have resources which we can all use together. And to me now, that's the C word I would be interested in examining is how further can we cooperate with each other and help each other in that way.
So some of the benefits of consolidation, obviously, first thing that comes to mind is duplication of resources and, and elimination of duplication of resources. And
so Dean, could you speak up? I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. So duplication of resources under consolidation and stuff, and how, I guess, the directly tied to that is financials. And the utmost goal is our ratepayers. And so how far into that do you go in a... into what would be potentially next phase?
Well, you need to go almost all the way in order to inform a decision. Because keep in mind, LAFCO does have the authority, as we exercise in Southern Marin, to initiate an actual consolidation of services. So the document itself would have to have addressed not only the equity issues in terms of how it would work financially, and how would it work with the assets, liabilities of the agencies. But then functionally, you had asked earlier about the voters. We would have to have a pretty good sense that it would be well received by the voters before taking action, because in absence of the legislature giving LAFCO a special waiver, and sometimes they do that, but this commission, even when given, has shown that they don't want to take that voting right away from residents and landowners. So even if we got a waiver, I don't think this commission's thinking is to exercise it. We would still have to go out to the voters. And if any one of those, San Rafael Sanitation or Ross Valley or Corte Madera Sanitary 2, said no, well, then it goes away. Again, we're all in a learning curve. So one of the things, again, we've learned from our Southern Marin experience is we want to produce a document, if we go down there, that is solid from the get-go, because we want to turn around and have an election relatively quickly, because what we learned with Southern Marin is since we cannot spend dollars on a campaign, the amount of time between LAFCO saying let's do this in an election allows for a lot of discourse to occur, not always truthful discourse about what has been recommended and what would happen. I don't know if that fully answered the question, but I would want add one other thing about the things that LAFCO would consider, which is, does a consolidation match up and improve the relationship between you as a service provider and the land use entities that you partner up with? You know, is there a matching of services? Marin's unique in the sense that you've got X number of land use authorities in Central Marin, but none of them provide sewer, at least not directly. San Rafael, Corte Madera provides sewer, but through a dependent entity. That's of interest to LAFCO.
All right. Tom, did you have something you wanted to ask or comment on?
No, I just, my comment was that just from my read of the report, I think there's been some conclusions that I'd like to take exception to in writing, and I'd like to study some of them. I think some of the recommendations, I'm just having trouble with, are the recommendations justified for some of them? Of course, I agree with a lot of them, but there are others that I think, you know, I'm very interested in reviewing further.
Understand.
And do it in writing.
Well, I wanted to ask about, and just going back to the very beginning in the initial summary of the report, I started out looking at under analysis and your themes, and I had problems with several of the themes. For example, agencies have a substantive influence on growth in Marin County. Do you think Ross Valley Sanitary District influences growth in Marin County?
I put a big wall on your desk.
No, I do not believe that sanitation... I mean, there was a time in history when the Marin Municipal Water District played a tremendous role in a short period of growth in the county because it refused connections. At a time when local governments, I worked as the environmental planner for the county at the time. This was back in the 70s. And we, the general plans were allowing a lot of growth, and The residents were not particularly content with that, appropriately so, and started working on ways to modify that and get general plans more in keeping with the resources and the conditions and so forth. And it was the Water District that actually put the reins on, because they said, oh, we don't have enough water, we can't make any more connections. I don't believe I know of another utility district that has influenced growth by virtue of the service it provides since then. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. There's a few instances here and there. Bolinas continues to. Their public utility district. But San Rafael Sanitation, Puerto Madera's sanitation entity, et cetera, we're not. That's like a, to me, the first thing out of the gate, I can't agree with. I don't know where that would come about. We certainly don't. We create capacity based upon the conditions that prevail and the development that those entities whose charter it is to determine the zoning and the development in the county indicate will be there. Yeah. Another one that I didn't understand what it meant. Variation in civic engagement, / board type matters in Central Moran. Well, I'm glad that board type matters, because we use that term a lot about things that matter, but it doesn't mean anything. Board type matters. What does that even say? It's like kind of an unintelligible phrase. So we're moving along. How do I even begin to look at recommendations when I don't even think that the central themes are even in touch with reality? So I don't know where those come from.
They come from staff. They come from the preparation of the document before you. And on the two examples that you offered, I could perhaps understand the reading of the common influence on growth in the manner that you're describing. I think staff is attempting to simply point out the abstract that you have X number of agencies in Marin that collectively serve half the county population. That's an influence. It's not necessarily to suggest a good or bad influence in either accommodating or restricting, but the reality is you have seven entities that directly support existing development and going forward are going to be the main cog in supporting future growth and development in Marin County. We're not prescribing a positive or negative comment in that. With respect to the item about board type matters, it is directly relevant to LAFCO's interest in weighing in on governance structure when I think we put all of the boards have sufficient and apparent civic engagement. I think that's the opening sentence. As you read further, I believe the statement is, of these seven entities, the two entities that appear most engaged in terms of civic engagement, participation at board meetings, are the two independent bodies of the seven. That statement has value to LAFCO. Again, it's a LAFCO document, so the orientation is to respond to a section of state law that we operate under a day-to-day basis. I think you have more, so I'll stop there.
Well, there one that is very near and dear to me is, of course, that it's the first time there's been any substantial articulation that Larkspur seat at this table is a historic relic, and we don't provide any services in the sanitation realm any longer. We turned them over to Ross Valley a number of years ago, but we were at the table, we helped form the agency, so we stayed at the table. I cannot find what your proposal is for what you do when I'm under the table and gone. What did you say in here, that the board should be six members otherwise determined, or should the board be five? I don't see.
Well, I don't think we prescribed an outcome, which wouldn't be appropriate for LAFCO. I think what we prescribed was the way we look at the structure of CMSA through an independent lens is you have a system in which
One board seat is dedicated to one entity that, as of 93 or 92, whatever the date, decided to remove themselves from the day-to-day operation
right.
of sanitary
right.
services.
And you say, remove the city of Larkspur's presence. And I can take, but, and do what?
I think the, so we try to balance a line here.
And weight governance with vested participation. What does that mean?
Agency ratepayers. You have seven or six direct ratepayers: San Rafael, Ross Valley. As I understand it, Larkspur is not a direct payer.
Right.
To
you
CMSA,
mean paying as
a
right.
paying due member.
Right.
So the comment is just that.
We have three ratepayers, not six. We have three ratepayers:
okay.
Corte Madera, Ross Valley, and San Rafael.
And those, and all those members, all those agencies are represented on the board. The comment here, and I appreciate, you know, this is an awkward comment, but Larkspur's presence on the board going forward.
I'm not arguing with that comment. Know. I'm asking what your proposed solution is, because this was rather important a number of years ago when we weren't all in a cooperative mood, shall we say, and there were agencies suing us who are members and all of that sort of thing. And actually, Larkspur's presence here was pretty important during that period of time. It would have been a very different agency had, for example, Ross Valley had had full control of the board by having three votes. Is that what you're proposing to change to? I just am looking for what the recommendation is.
I believe the recommendation is to ask the district to review, not the district, excuse me, the Joint Powers Authority to review its governing structure in light of Larkspur no longer being a direct member paying due. Now, you may provide a comment back to us saying, and you just kind of outlined reasons why maybe it does make sense. But again, from an outside agency perspective, you look at the relationship between member dues in governance decision-making, frankly, there's a disconnect. And maybe the disconnect has context. That comment right there is out of context, perhaps, but it certainly has value for LAFCA relative to our task with weighing in on, are there alternate governance options available that would enhance civic engagement? That's what that statement is trying to get to, without over-prescribing an outcome. We try not to do that.
You know, I have a real a comment, too, on the conclusion number one, agencies, substantial influence on growth in Marin County. And in your general conclusions, in you got down to it, the seven effective agencies organized to provide public wastewater affect one half of the county residents, and so on and so on, and as such have a significant influence in accommodating or inhibiting new growth. And that's what I disagree with.
Yeah.
Do we have the power to inhibit new growth?
Well, you have to.
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Now, you did talk about the seven agencies. You could have said the seven agencies have had a significant influencing in accommodating past growth. That's true. We've served past growth. But you've added or inhibiting there. And I really think that's very misleading. In fact, it's not true. We're not planning agencies. We've gone out of our way to not be planning agencies.
Okay.
And then you've followed that up with the recommendation that CMA should allocate capacity to its members. And I really think that misses the point of how CMSA works. CMSA is, I consider it like a big city. CMSA has a service area. And if one neighborhood in the service area requires growth, like a city, if a piece of a city requires growth, the city provides capacity for water, streets, and everything else. We're kind of an agency. Our job is to provide capacity. We're not asked, do we agree with the growth plan of agencies? They don't check. And our capacity is entirely different than the water district, say, or a street, or virtually anything, because a wastewater agency is sized in this area for wet weather flows. And so we have huge amount of capacity, because we have
wet weather sometimes.
Wet weather INI flow. And I know that our agency, and I know the other member agencies, are really working on INI, and we think we're going to have some substantial breakthroughs in SANI 1, because we're figuring out where there are drainage pipes coming into our sewer, which, and it's a big deal. There are big flows there. So we're going to have more capacity. Now, we're not advocating filling it up by any stretch of the imagination, but I submit we don't have any impact on growth of it. If the planning agencies like the town of Ross or Fairfax or San Anselmo decide they want to put in a new neighborhood, you know, low-cost income, or like Fairfax has a low-income housing program, they ask us, you know, will you service? Yes. And that's it. So I think that discussion about the growth is extremely misleading, and I think it's detrimental to our purpose, actually.
Well, right, it tends to ascribe to us, I'm assuming, the role of being one of you, even though I don't have any pipes any longer.
I
do have pipes. I have lots of pipes. That we have more power and authority in this realm than we have. Now, maybe it's semantics. Maybe that isn't what substantive influence meant in your parlance.
But it says it or inhibiting. It says it right there.
Well, on a different page, yeah.
Yeah.
So that.
I think that word inhibit might come out in the final. Well, just projecting ahead here.
I just don't think, I mean, when you say influence, it implies, and there's nothing pejorative, but it implies that you affect something one way or another, if you can influence it. Influence a vote could be a yes or a no. And I just think that I think that most of the people at this table do not agree that we influence growth in Marin County.
See, I think our services got built because of growth. There was growth, and so we extended sewers.
Sure.
We built a treatment plant. We didn't influence it. Our facilities are influenced by growth.
Right.
It's the opposite.
And in fact, that particular issue was a big source of conflict for us, because there were certain communities in our special district that felt that we did influence that and thought that we had control over what was going on in San Quentin. And and it with lawsuits and
right.
When the fact of the matter is, and when I first got on the board, I went to Jason and I said, Jason, if people are telling me there's no capacity on the San Quentin area out there to do what Steve Kinsey in his I'm just saying that everybody was referencing this plan
that had been produced
in exploration years ago to build 5,000 units out there. And when I talked to Jason, he said, you could put capacity-wise, you could put skyscrapers out there. So then I came to the conclusion, okay, well, since ultimately the city of Larkspur would be responsible for that, they're the land use agency, not us. So we have to take that off the table when considering what we're going to do about this issue. There's probably going to be another one coming up right away where there are people who want us to be a land use agency. And my opinion is, can we support the collection of whatever will be built there in the future, and can Jason support us in delivering that? So I agree also very much so that we're just not a planning agency. It's not part of what we do.
In the rest of your document, you do have all that information that does reference growth projections and it does say how we have sufficient capacity up to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So is it relevant just to strike this whole sentence? or this whole recommendation or comment, I guess, to just because you already addressed that by saying that the cities have projected so much growth and the county can handle so much growth, and then it just flips back and says, yes, we do have the capacity for dry weather and wet weather flows for this amount. End of story. I think that takes us right out of this whole umbrella of being any inclination of being a planning agency.
Diane.
Thank you. I wanted to piggyback on a couple of things that were said. San Quentin, whatever future plans for development come up at San Quentin, that will be in the hands of the Board of Supervisors. Not this agency, and if they want to build a whole new city out, well, Larkspur to a certain extent, but it's
our sphere of influence.
Okay. But for the most part, I think it'll be Board of Supervisors.
Yeah. for Larkspur's sake.
Now, in Corte Madera, the sanitary district is run by the town, where it's actually a unit of the town. And you would think, oh gosh, well, okay, the town has land use planning authority. However, even the town of Corte Madera doesn't have the authority to make the decision not to grow. ABAG gives us quotas every, 8 years, and tells us how many, at a minimum, new housing units we need to zone for. Mm-hmm. So you can't even say that Corte Madera as a town has that authority. I would say that the regional authorities, ABAG and MTC, actually have much greater influence on growth in Corte Madera, Ross Valley, and probably San Rafael than any of the city agencies. And that perhaps should be put in here because it's not the sanitary districts.
As far as us deciding on the manner in which we wish to prepare an agency response, I think I'm going to, if there are no more questions from Mr. Simons right now, oh, Marielle.
I represent San Rafael Sand. I don't understand your recommendation.
Could you tell us the page when you find it?
I'm looking at the executive summary, page 2-11. It's repeated several places. SRSD should designate the loan board seat statutorily dedicated to a member of the county therein to the incumbent holding supervisor District 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that mean? What are you talking about?
So you have a section of San Rafael Sanitation District that right now, excuse me, let me back up. You have the county board of supervisors have a policy that it's kind of a volunteer basis on who serves as their one member on San Rafael Sanitation District. It appears over practice that it has been everyone other than Supervisor District Number 1 representative. The reason why that is of interest to us is that's really the only supervisorial district that overlaps San Rafael Sanitation District. So if I'm in San Rafael Sanitation District and I'm in the city of San Rafael at the same time, mm-hmm. Chances are when it comes to rates being considered by the board, if I'm in San Rafael, I don't have direct voting connection right now to the supervisor who currently oversees that district, which is Katie Rice. She has a small portion, but Dan Connolly's district encompasses most of San Rafael Sanitation District.
But that's the city.
Correct. But we're talking about San Rafael Sanitation District. And so the comment...
Yeah, but if you did Damon, it doesn't matter whatever their numbers are,
yeah.
Then the county, the unincorporated area of the county, would have no representatives.
No, they would still have Damon.
But he doesn't technically represent them. They're in Katie's district. That's why whatever district Katie is on the board, because it's the unrepresented county area. She represents that, so that every
resident... They don't vote for the city council because it's unincorporated.
Right, they don't
vote for Katie, so to speak, because she's their supervisor.
She's their district.
And
See, our GIS system says the overwhelming majority are in Damon's district.
Well, right. That's true, but they're also in the city of San Rafael. They have
so
us.
They get two votes.
He doesn't have unincorporated San Rafael Sand. Katie right. has unincorporated San Rafael Sand.
Right.
Well, remember that the incorporated, unincorporated doesn't really have an impact on San Rafael sanitation.
Well, I guess it does because yes. the city council appoints two members
True.
To the board.
Okay.
So the city council is speaking for all of those people. And then we specifically have the supervisor for the areas that we don't speak for be there. And it's whatever.
It's very well thought out
whatever
to make sure they
Katie
have representation.
Is. Right. Whatever district Katie is.
Two. Isn't she two?
Two, I guess. On. That's why she's there and not Damon.
Director, you've explained this better than anyone has talked to me about this before, so I'm going to look at that, and assuming your comment holds, I think we have, in addition to getting word of that inhibiting comment, I know we have at least one more.
And I will just give you a word of advice, having survived the ABAC wars and been the county representative on the ABAC thing, you want no part of the growth discussion. You know, none of us want any part of that, and you just don't want to get involved in that. So just focus on what we do and what we do pretty well, I think, and what we how we can do it better. There's efficiencies to be gained, and I would just like the certainty of purpose that you took in when looking at the Murray District and the, what was it?
San Quentin Village.
San Quentin Village.
That's Murray Park.
Yeah, that's the type of certainty of purpose that we would like in your broader recommendations for consolidation.
Well said, thank you.
And, you know, we have really been working to consolidate Murray Park in Ross Valley. And we're
yes.
working with the county on this.
Yes.
And it's going to take a while,
yes.
as we know. But we are working very hard to incorporate Murray Park. We completely certain. I wanted to make one
on
point about finances. And I think that this kind of overlooks something. One of the best consolidations ever in Marin County was the formation of the Central Marin Sanitation Agency. There were four treatment plants, all providing pretty lousy treatment, some worse than others. And they were small and they were inefficient, and they didn't have you know, a really quality effluent. And over the course of about 15 years, and that's what it took, it was early 70s till about 1980-something. So that's maybe 12 years, 13 years. We finally consolidated the treatment of all of Central Marin, and it's a big chunk of the Marin County population. And we've got a treatment plant here that hadn't had any miss on its discharge requirements for 11 consecutive years. Our costs, we watch them. I mean, that's what we're here for. So it's a tremendous consolidation effort. And for wastewater, because that's what we're doing, is wastewater, the real money is in treatment. There's a lot of expenses with collection, but the economies of scale come with the treatment. Collection is a piecemeal basis. You know, you can consolidate it. You can make it big. But in my experience, and I've been a municipal finance consultant for over 40 years, you get a big treatment agency, and you know what you get? Another layer of staff. You get the manager, and then you get a couple more layers because we're spread out. So, you know, we can talk about consolidation, but I really don't want us to overlook the fact that we are a consolidated agency and really, you know, a very efficient one.
Wait, was there an adjective?
I think you were talking about the county.
Pretty efficient?
Pretty efficient. Yeah. Very efficient.
Yeah.
Well, we've probably done enough.
So I would like to ask if there's anyone in the audience who wants to ask any questions or make any observations at this point. Okay. I think that we need to bring it back to the board and make a decision as to how we proceed here and whether we want to have a subcommittee that sits down and makes some recommendations on our comment or whatnot. I'm sure that we really aren't, we have expressed certain things tonight that
when
we...
When does the general managers meet again, Jason?
A week from Friday.
A week from Friday. shouldn't this be kicked to the general manager?
Ooh, sounds like a great idea.
To conduct a comprehensive assessment and on all areas where factual clarifications would assist the LAFCO. Perhaps they could compile those.
Tom, you had something you
wanted to add? Well, I think that's a great idea, because we pass the work off. I think we need to make our comments to the general manager. Each of us submit. You know, it's not a, it wouldn't be a Brown Act violation if we submit them to staff, each of us. You know, like your comment and
no reply all.
Comments, yeah.
No reply all.
No reply
no CC
all. Submit comments to
okay.
Jason.
Okay. And what day would you like those comments by? Today is Tuesday.
So I have a question. Would you guys be submitting comments to me as CMSA board comments? Or would you also be submitting comments to me pertaining to maybe collection agencies specific, or would you just send those to your own
You'll
managers?
Have to make that decision.
Well, for your edification and consultation with the other general managers, how this could be most productively be brought forward in a way that enhances everyone.
So the general managers are treatment, or are they all the... Would it be
all the GPA managers and myself.
Oh,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's a perfect group.
I would suggest that each of us also meet with the manager of our sanitary district and review not only comments and concerns that affect CMSA as a whole, because I think our managers need to be up on that, but also any comments or concerns relative to just your agency that might be become part of a comment letter from your particular agency that presumably your board.
So the general managers can decide that, you know, this can be a CMSA comment and this could be like a Cordillera Sanitary District.
Well, I think there's going to be both.
I expect both.
Right. So I will be forwarding to Jason what my comments are about, you know, things pertaining to CMSA. If you're interested, maybe I'll share some of my SD2 things. But and I'm not sure at this point because I don't have my list really that organized, so I don't know if it really is going to be two separate or if it's going to be just kind of one overall list.
I think our goal should be to have consolidated comments on the consolidation study.
We can also bring this back at our meeting in June.
Yeah, because we have until June now, so
we'll have time to. Yeah, I know there's going to be cake, but we'll have time.
There'll be cake.
Yeah, there's going to be cake.
It'll be sugar bus.
Yeah. He told me that'd be cake.
Thank you for inviting me.
And whatever comments you do produce, whether it be through Jason and or the other district managers, they will be memorialized in the final report. So, I'm assuming there will be some agreement, a large agreement. But if there are disagreements still, your comments will be on the record and going forward. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Say hi to Jeff.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Tell him it's been too long since I've seen him.
I will.
Thank you.
Okay, so you guys will send comments to me. I'll consolidate them, and then I'll talk with the managers about them, and they'll bring CMSA comments, even maybe some duplicate ones that are applicable also to CMSA, to their June board meeting.
What day is the June board meeting?
June board meeting on
the second Tuesday.
I don't have the date.
It is Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. in the agency office.
So you mean by June 12th?
It would be great if I had comments from the board by the end of May. That way I can take a look at them. I can have them meet with the managers. We can extract some and finalize at least CMSA's comments within the next week after that. And then bring them to the June meeting.
So I'm sorry. So what's your deadline?
End of May. That'd be great. Plus or minus a few days.
All right. We're now going to take up item number 9. This is the Bay Area Biosolids to Energy Coalition lead agency discussion. Jace, we've been nominated.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hartzell. So CMSA has been a member of the Bay Area Biosolids Energy Coalition since 2009. We're signatory to the Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement, and we've been actively involved with the coalition since that time period. I've been agency's representative. I've attended, the monthly steering committee meetings. I as part of the CASA trip to Sacramento, D.C., I stayed a few days and did some lobbying for the coalition, you know, at the capitals. I serve, you know, on an executive committee to supervise our prior executive director and then select our current program manager. So I've been pretty actively involved, and I've given the board updates periodically over the last several years on the coalition activities. So a few things have happened over the last year. One is we've selected a program manager. So we hired Corolla Engineers, and Ms. Sarah Delorier is our program manager. So she handles all of the kind of administrative activities for the coalition. Delta Diablo Sanitation District, which was the lead agency for many, many years, and they're listed in the Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement as lead agency, they started to move away from some of those responsibilities. So we transferred some to the program manager. Then at the end of last calendar year, when their manager retired, the agency decided that they wanted to pretty much resign as lead agency. So the coalition contracted with CASA, California Association of Sanitation Agencies, to act as the fiscal and the contracting agent for the coalition. So if you look at the JEPA section on lead agency, which is attached, all the duties that are identified are pretty much handled by the program manager or by CASA. But we still need to have a lead agency. And the primary role of the lead agency would be to administratively supervise the CASA contract and authorize payment to CASA for their expenses for their contracting and fiscal agent responsibilities. So this was brought up at a recent meeting. There was silence in the room. And I said, well, CMSA could definitely consider that. We just, you know, because I think it's a minimal amount of time commitment, maybe a couple hours a month at most. And we've been involved in a lot of different aspects of the coalition's activities. We're even sending some of our biosolids now 2 loads a week to a facility in Fairfield that was a kind of a venture that started through the coalition's work. So I requested to send a letter. We'll definitely consider it. And Ms. Laurier sent that letter. And we have the contract with CASA, which outlines their responsibilities. So staff's recommendation is to authorize the agency to serve as the coalition's lead agency and then authorize me to execute the contract with CASA on behalf of the coalition. And if there are any strange things occur, and I think it's going to take a lot more time, then there are provisions in JEPA for us to resign and look for another lead agency.
And you can be reimbursed if it takes a lot of your time.
If we have, you know, a lot of direct expenses, we could be reimbursed.
Direct expenses. They will not reimburse for any staff times.
They won't.
That's what it says. It says excluding any personnel.
I'm absolutely confident that our stellar general manager can handle these duties in addition to his existing duties and resolving the CalPERS issues. So I'm prepared to move aside as soon as you've all exhausted your questions.
I just am bothered that there's no reimbursement. Diane?
Would it be possible to ask for that particular policy to be revisited in exchange for serving as lead agency?
The reimbursement piece?
That there be some kind of compensation to the agency to make up for staff time.
Well, there's no mechanism in the JEPA to do that right now. But you know what we're going to be discussing at our meeting on Thursday, which we'll host here, about either amending the JEPA so it's current because it's outdated quite a bit and there's a lot of amendments to it, or just crafting a new MOU. But I can tell you, amending that JEPA, that's a huge ordeal because the people in the room can draft the amendment that has to go to 19 governing boards. And a lot of those are associated with large agencies like the San Francisco PUC or the City of San Jose. And the representatives on the committee are mid-level managers, and there's like 6 people that they have to move that amendment up through. And it's the last time we amended the JEPA, it was a pretty minor amendment. It took about 11 months to have that amendment approved. But I could definitely, you know, once we're considering which way to do it, I could definitely bring that up. That's something that'd be
maybe
fair.
Jason, how much of your time do you think it'll be?
I think it's pretty minimal. I'm thinking a couple hours a month.
I accused you of missing a meeting, and that's how you got nominated for this.
I think that's the one I called into.
Yeah.
And they put you on
mute. Well, mute it for a second.
Okay.
I would support this too.
Okay.
And if it causes a lot of time, then we'll deal with it.
Yeah.
Can you report back to us in a year as to how much time it's utilized?
When I have my evaluation in September and October, okay. I can let you guys know.
Sounds good.
All right. Is there a motion?
I move that a recommendation that we authorize the agency to serve as the Bay Area Biosolids to Energy Coalition lead agency and authorize the general manager to execute the fiscal agent support services agreement with the California Association of Sanitation Agencies after its approval by the coalition.
Second? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Thank you on behalf of the coalition. I'll let them know on Thursday.
Wait, that's a conflict of interest here. We have, the PG&E.
How much does Sarah get? Does she get the consultant rate, hourly, or we just pay her? She was a Corolla employee.
She's a Corolla employee, and she has an hourly rate that's in her contract.
Okay.
And her contract is transferred.
Is it the same as she gets for a client?
I'm not sure what that hourly rate is.
Item number 11, PG&E interconnection agreement. The recommendation requested is to approve the PG&E interconnection agreement and authorize the GM to execute the agreement. Jason, could you report?
Sure. Over the last year, we've been engaged in several activities that would culminate in the agency being able to supply power to the local PG&E utility grid. One of the major ones was modifying our existing interconnection agreement with PG&E to allow us to deliver that power. Another one was negotiating a power sale agreement with either PG&E or Marin Clean Energy. We also applied for a Clean Water State Revolving Fund loan under their Green Project Reserve Program. We're also seeking renewable power provider or certification through the California Energy Commission. We also obtained an account with the Western Renewable Energy Generation Information System. So there's all these things that are kind of working together once they're completed, and we have enough biogas to be energy self-sufficient, then we could start setting power to the grid. So before the board tonight is the interconnection agreement with PG&E. Our staff, as well as our energy consultant, have worked with PG&E to wrap this up. A couple months ago, I gave you a report on the findings from the supplemental review, which identified about $75,000 of improvements to either the interconnection or to their distribution system to allow us to supply power. That's been included in the agreement. So our staff and energy consultant think the agreement is pretty sound. We had our construction contract attorney, Bill McInerney, take a look at it and do a fatal flaw level review. He thinks looks pretty good. So our recommendation is for the board to approve the interconnection agreement. And by approving the agreement, it also commits the agency to spend, which provide about $80,000 in funding. There's an increase of $5,000 because we need to have a separate meter to meter the power that we're delivering to the grid. And also there's a cost of ownership, provision in their agreement. And that could take a couple different forms. One is a lump sum payment of a little over $65,000 or a monthly payment of $383. And so our recommendation is one to authorize us to approve the agreement, provide the funding of the $80,000, and also to select the $383 of cost of ownership monthly fee to PG&E. So it's good news. It's a big milestone event,
right,
in terms of the agency's supplying power, is to have this and only have really $80,000. I've told some of my colleagues at CASA, some from much larger agencies that have went through this process, and they've had, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of improvements to the local PG&E system to allow them. And some of those were cost prohibitive for them to move forward with their programs.
Other questions?
Well, Jason, you explained too that Jack looked over the contract, or did you say?
Bill McInerney, our construction contract attorney.
He said it was, there wasn't any killer features in it, but it was slanted It was in favor of PG&E, but it's a reasonable.
Really?
Yeah. Really? But it's not a killer contract.
Right.
For
it's a take it or leave it sort of a competition.
Yeah. And this is a big step. They're just a series of giant steps to do this project, aren't they?
It's an exciting step, is it not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 80,000 isn't bad, and 380 a month or whatever.
What's the difference another between question? Those? The improvements, the $80,000 for the interconnection and distribution, and the cost of ownership charge. What is?
My understanding is the cost of ownership is payment to PG&E to maintain those new elements of the system to allow us to supply. But I have an expert in the room that could answer that question better than me, and that's Brian Thomas, our engineering manager.
Just a way for them to make money.
Yeah. It is that as Jason explained it, that is the ongoing ownership and maintenance of the facilities.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because the $80,000 of improvements is PG&E's equipment. It's not our equipment. It's stuff that they will own and maintain.
So that's their capital from capital construction costs, and then the $380 $400 a month maintenance. Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Other questions? Well, goodness, are we prepared to hear a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the PG&E interconnection agreement and authorize the general manager to execute the agreement.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, it carried unanimously. Next is item number 12 on the agenda, and this is the update on the agency's power sale options with a recommendation to authorize the GM to negotiate a power sale agreement with MCE. She's frowning.
Hold
your question until after he's spoken.
So last October, we brought to the board a different, you know, suite of power sale, you know, options. And most of them were through PG&E. Some weren't very feasible. Some, you know, we weren't eligible for. And what we honed in on was looking at further discussions with Marin Clean Energy and PG&E. At the time, Marin Clean Energy has, you know, one tariff, and there's different categories, you know, to that tariff, and each category has a certain, you know, megawatt allocation to it. So right now we're in the category two, and that buying price is, you know, I think 10.5 cents per kilowatt hour. PG&E has two different tariffs. One is their standard rural energy tariff, and that one's about 8.9 cents a kilowatt hour. Then they had a newer tariff, which is associated with biogas production for anaerobic digester facilities like ours, either private or public, or landfill gas facilities. And that's called their e-biomass tariff. And that has a cost of, or price they'll pay, of 12.7 cents. So we focused in on the e-biomat and the Marin Clean Energy, you know, tariffs. And in discussions with, you know, the board, we didn't think we were eligible for the biomat tariff because of you have to have a commercial operation date of June of 2013. And our cogeneration facility, the original one, was replaced with an entirely new facility back in 2005. As in the staff report, we looked up, that was about $2.7 million at that time. In discussions with you know, some board members and at the board meeting, we thought, well, gee, maybe if we propose a PG&E that they consider, you know, the new generator we have, you know, as our facility, that we'd be eligible for the biomat, because we received that back in 2013, part of a settlement agreement with the vendor that was doing a major overhaul of the engine and the generator. And we received that, and it sat in, you know, storage facility for a couple of years until our next overhaul, and that contract we installed it. So its commercial operation date was around 2015, which is after 2013. So we proposed that idea to PG&E. At the time, they thought that was fine. So we went forward with those discussions. But then, you know, as we got to fill out the application and started, it was starting to be reviewed and had further and more substantive discussions in relation to negotiating terms and conditions of power sale agreements, they said, well, you guys have to comply with these California Energy Commission renewable portfolio standard guidelines. And I attached that. And under those provisions, we could change the operation date of our facility under the repowered facility provisions. So there's two criteria there, and that is that the prime generating equipment of the overall facility has to be installed after 2013. Not the whole facility, but just the main equipment. And we had that the replacement cost had to be 80, the capital cost had to be 80% of the original cost. So we looked at that a little closer, and you can see in the provision there on page 39 of the handout for biogas or biomethane prime generating equipment under that section, it's the generator and the engine. So our engine clearly doesn't meet that requirement because it was installed in 2005. And then there's the investment of 80%. The generator was only $57,000. So that doesn't meet that capital threshold. So based on what we learned there and discussions with energy consultants, we concluded that we're not eligible for the BioMat program. We are for their PG&E's renewable energy, but that's only 8.8 or 9 cents a kilowatt hour. So renewable energy, you would pay a little more. There's still a capacity in that one, that second tier in their schedule. So we've also completed application sent to them, so we have a reservation, which is not a commitment, you know, for the agency. But just based on what we learned, you know, from reviewing the CEC guidelines and determination that we're not eligible, that we're recommending now that the board authorize us to negotiate directly with Marine Clean Energy. And if that's approved, then we'll bring back, you know, a power sale agreement at some point in the future. Timing isn't critical on this for us because it's going to be probably until March of 2018 before PG&E makes their system improvements. So we have plenty of time still to negotiate terms and conditions with Marine Clean Energy. And also what we learned in talking with PG&E's representative in Marine Clean Energy, that Marine Clean Energy would be much more flexible with how much power we deliver, how much we buy, how that's tracked versus PG&E. It was much more onerous on how we had to identify specific amount of power that we deliver, and if we had some, you know, a little window of 30% plus or minus, but it was unclear what happened if we didn't deliver that. There'd be maybe a penalty, or if we deliver more than the designated amount plus 30%, maybe we'd get paid for it, and other restrictions on time, on certain times that we'd have to notify them that we had the power to deliver. It just seemed like it would be a lot more onerous and more staff resources to work with PG&E versus Marine Clean Energy. So that's kind of, you know, the synopsis of what's happened over the last couple months.
So we need to hook in with MCE. We need to obtain a new interconnection agreement from PG&E, and that's this?
That's that, yes.
Yeah, so we've done that. Have we gotten a Western Regional Renewable Energy?
We have a number.
Oh, we've got a number.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's, you know, we need to have the Energy Commission said we'll get their certification after we have the interconnection agreement and we have a sale agreement that's in the works.
Okay. So then this is the sale agreement.
Well, this is the authorization to develop the sale agreement.
Yeah.
And then the improvements, PG&E is going to build the improvements.
That's correct. And we do have some, you know, improvements on our site on the control systems, and we're going to be hiring an electrical engineer to design those, and then we'll construct those.
Any other questions, Tom?
If things go south with MCE, you'll bring some alternative recommendation back?
Definitely. If they went south with MCE, then we'd probably be talking about working with PG&E through their normal renewable energy tariff program, 8.9 cents per kilowatt hour.
And all the requirements.
Yeah.
And those are the only options?
There are other options that we looked at back in October, mm-hmm. turned a direct access program. Mm-hmm. That was even more cumbersome to work with through the PG&E regular tariff program. And then there were some options where if we had adjacent property on a different meter, mm-hmm. that we could sell power, or that we get a credit for what we mm-hmm. delivered, that could be applied there. But that's not really applicable to us. Mm-hmm. There was, I forget the number, I think there was probably like 5 or 6 potential options. But the ones that made the most sense were just a direct, you know, sale agreement with, you know, an energy, you know, provider.
Does MCE have any contracts similar to this?
Not with a facility for biogas, you know, produced energy.
Right, other than
I don't think they have any generation facilities.
Maybe they have some solar.
Some solar
ones, yeah.
They have some PV.
Right.
Probably on an
Monica,
energy.
Do you have any questions? Diane?
I'm ready to make a motion if there's no public comment.
Thank you.
How long of a power cell contract are we talking about here?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah, I believe it's 10 years, yeah.
It's a crazy low price. I just looked up the time of use rates are 5 times that.
Yeah, and the first tier is like 20 cents a kilowatt hour. It's just the lowest tier.
Yeah, this is just...
Wait,
is like
20 cents?
That's what it costs us to buy power from PG&E.
Yeah.
Just tier one. Tier two is like 27 cents, I think.
And I just looked up the time of use rates, and the summer peak is over 50 cents a kilowatt hour.
And it's going to go up over 10 years.
Well, I know the brown power rates, not rule. I mean, they're really low.
Should we think about 5 years? Have you considered that?
Well, we could definitely propose that to Marin Energy, but... We're not quite sure how they'll respond. We could recommend that. Brian, do you have any sense of shorter duration term contracts?
We haven't had a direct conversation with Marine Clean Energy about shortening their term.
Yeah.
So I can't say for certain how they'd respond.
You can't what?
I can't say for certain how they would respond to that request, but we can definitely make that.
But you're going
to
negotiate with them.
Yeah, we can propose that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, one possibility might be to write in certain changes that occur. If X has occurred, then we want to reopen this for consideration. I mean, thinking of it from their perspective, they're not paying the highest rate to us. They're getting something they need. So why would they turn down 5 years' worth of supply?
We could definitely propose it.
Yeah.
Or something like we figure out the percent of this of their first tier. You know, not less than...
Yeah.
But not less than 42% of your current first tier sales price.
What are they paying the actual homeowner who produces surplus? Do you know?
They just reverse the meter?
Right. It's a net metering.
Well, PG&E does a net metering.
Everybody does. Yeah, it's a
which is high.
Well,
yeah, it's
but my letter from Marin Clean Energy actually referred to an actual check being cut once a year. I mean, I know that my recollection is that Council Member Chu got an actual check.
Wow. Well, that's great.
From MCE. PG&E, it's like a credit back. But, maybe I'm
but
wrong.
I just hit my
annual. I haven't gotten a check yet, so maybe
you will, but we're not on a net metering. We're getting paid a flat low rate for a long time. Yeah, and is it? And there's no penalty, so we can decide tomorrow we don't want to do this. It's not taken.
As of right now, that's correct.
We sign the contract, what do we have to deliver?
Well, we don't. You know, I haven't seen the contract, so I'm just looking for the authorization to start to have those discussions with them and to start developing the contract, and I can bring reports back to the board on certain items.
Is it an exclusive? Do we have an exclusive negotiation arrangement with them?
Well,
I mean, that's what we're looking for. I mean, do you mean that
as opposed to
during the negotiation, go get your best deal out of MCE and then swing by PG&E and say, hey, can you beat this? Because that was our original plan, was to try and get them negotiating against the other.
I think in our discussions, they're pretty fixed on these tariff amounts that have went to the Public Utility Commission. These things got approved, and it didn't sound like they had much flexibility.
You mean MCE?
With just their
with
their tariff amounts, that these have been approved by boards and other entities, and that's what they had. Brian, do you have any information on that? We can ask questions about that.
I believe they're pretty set. On their tariff amounts. For MCE, they've set up their tier rates to have a certain threshold of capacity, and so we are in that tier two capacity. If they get enough people, a year from now, it may drop down to the tier three, when I believe that drops down to 10 cents a kilowatt hour. So they have their rate structure
Right, these are their prices for purchasing, and so far as we know, we're at best their second generation source.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're making all this stuff up on the fly. So, I don't know how locked in they are.
You know, because it's you know, their board is just, you know, appointed by local agencies. Right. They may have more flexibility.
Right. They can do things.
We can definitely propose.
And PG&E, they're locked in on their tariffs for things they sell, but their purchases
is their own.
They're much more flexible.
Right, but I think Jason was pointing out to us that there are layers of commitment with them that have to do with capacity and delivery that could...
PG&E does.
Could, yeah. Right, jeopardize.
There may be other complications there, but... Yeah, you know, this is not a particularly good deal. Are we imagining that we'll have a lot of production?
It's going to be dependent on a lot of different factors.
Okay, so we're going to need something flexible. So if and when available, we'll sell it to MCE for whatever their price is.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I mean, these are the easy things. What's going to be more difficult is finding other sources of organic waste to bring in, you know, becoming energy self-sufficient, having continuous, reliable, you know, power to deliver based on the feedstocks, you know, capacity limitations on the engine generator. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we do? If we expand our program, we could produce more biogas, but then what do we do with the biogas? That'll be answered in a task in our master plan, but any solutions to handling more biogas due to a bigger program are going to be expensive.
Right.
They're going to be gas storage, gas fueling, gas treatment facilities, gas, you know, delivery systems for vehicles, or it's going to be another generation system, you know, bigger one or a secondary one.
That's why this price is really important. And you know what number we don't have is our cost. How much does it cost CMSA to make a kilowatt hour of electricity?
Do we have that?
You mean like? You mean?
Yeah. What does it cost us to?
Yeah.
In terms of like, you know, staff time to start up the mixing equipment, and that'd be quite an analysis to come up with. But we could.
Yeah, cost of service studies are big.
We could do that.
It's an enormous number. That's a lot higher than this is the point.
Yeah. I mean, all we can do in terms of negotiating is, you know, try to negotiate a higher amount. I mean, beyond that, I mean, there's only two people we can sell to. One, you know, is less than the 10.5, and from what, you know, I discussed with Brian, our consultant, it would be complex to work with them until we got to a point where we had a bigger generator, we had a lot more feedstock coming in, we had expanded, you know, organic waste receiving facility, so we could utilize the digest capacity, and we were delivering hundreds of megawatts continuously. That's a long time from now. Until we get to that point, working with PG&E with the kind of the commitments they're going to need on delivery volumes, and it's in the future. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, MCE having a shorter term contract while we develop our program and the board makes decisions. Do we want a more high efficiency, bigger generator at some point? Do we want to expand our facility? Do we want to produce, you know, biomethane that's, you know, fuel grade? There's a lot of things for us to decide as an agency, as a board, before we're able to commit to delivering much power continuously.
Right, and we're a year away from our interconnection agreement.
Yeah.
And assuming that that's true, when do you think we could be delivering, have any power available for export?
Well, the first step would be is to, you know, get sale agreements in place, get renewable energy generator certification in place, mm-hmm. so we could actually deliver the power, because we want to be in a position where we're starting to identify other, you know, sources and try to lure them to bring their material to CMSA versus somewhere else. And they start doing that, we start producing the gas, but we can't utilize all the gas. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, you know, we want to avoid having to flare the gas. There's a lot of timing issues, a lot of moving parts right now to be able to answer that question.
But it's at least a year and probably closer to two. Is that reasonable?
You know, probably closer to two, because we want to have the interconnection in place. We need, you know, a sale agreement in place so we could get paid for delivering the power.
And our reason for wanting to get in the queue with MCE is to get in at that second tier and not have a lower one be there before other solar farms or whatever kick off?
We have a long time to have discussions with MCE. So we can talk about the shorter duration contracts. We can talk about flexibility and different tariff prices. I think, you know, somebody mentioned tying it to, you know, the actual purchase, you know, property, you know, purchase costs from them, you know, for different time of use.
Yeah.
Instead of just the 10 cents. I mean, we can have these discussions and see how flexible they are.
Right.
But we're going to be a really small producer for a long time. And they may be, you know, really interested in having, you know, a biogas, you know, energy generated supplier to work with and kind of start out there, because then they could, and that would help them. That'd be a model for them to use as they expand their service area into other areas. And ways where you start looking at generating power using biogas, because a lot of agencies don't, well, most agencies I see don't do that.
Yeah. I just wanted to know, how much power is generated in Marin? Maybe we could get some mileage out of the fact that we're, you know, it's the Marin, you know, energy, but we're generating it in Marin. Is there any...
Keep that as part of your arsenal as you...
And also we're a different type of generation, right? Most of it's solar and...
Yeah, or, energy credits they're buying, right?
Well,
from other places.
MCE does have a new program they've launched. I mean, they've got the light green, they've got the deep green, and then they've got local sol. And they're currently... it's brand new. It is related to a solar facility they have just recently built up in Nevada,
near Stafford Lake.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they are offering certain residents in that area the option to go 100% local solar. But of course, they can only cover a few hundred homes.
Four homes a day.
Yeah. But, you know, it could be that they are more interested in local, and this could help them.
And their diversification.
Yeah.
Well, I move we authorize.
Well, wait a second. Is there anyone who would like
to? We can still do discussion after.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, if we're going to offer the audience a chance to comment on this, I think it should inform our motion as we move forward. So is there anyone who wishes to address us on this topic? Okay. Sorry. Now, Mr. Gaffney.
I would like to move that we authorize the general manager to negotiate a power sale agreement with Marin Clean Energy and try and look at some options.
Sure. We'll do that.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Great. Thank you. I'll report back, you know, how well those discussions are moving along in these few areas.
Well, golly, you saved the best for last.
This will be quick.
Wait till you hear why our budget, our finance guy's not here.
So one thing we said we'd hand out tonight is our updated 10-year financial forecast. And upon reviewing the prior forecast, Ken had a lot of ideas to make improvements and tie it to, you know, end of year treasury reports. So he's been working on that yesterday, and he's going to wrap it up today. But unfortunately, Ken got in a big car accident, five-car accident, right after the toll plaza on Richmond Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not able to make it in.
Yeah, he's
a little, you know, cut up a little bit. His car was damaged, so he had to take care of himself and his vehicle and rent a car and stuff today. So I told him that I'd try to give the budget presentation.
He was in the middle of the...
So I have a PowerPoint here, and I'll move real quick to the slides because it's... So we did meet with the finance committee a couple weeks ago and reviewed the high level figures in the budget from the, you know, the revenue side, operating expense side, and the fiscal year 18 CIP. There's a little bit on the 10-year CIP. The committee thought everything looked proper and fine, and authorized us to bring it to the board with a recommendation to you guys for us to move it to the develop the final proposed budget and move it to the June meeting. So just real quick, we'll talk about, you know, the operating budget, a little bit about the capital program. Don't have the financial forecast. So what I'll do is, once Ken comes back in, we'll update that, and we'll email it to the board, and we'll have more of a presentation focusing on that at the June meeting. Mm-hmm. Overview. So we did meet with the finance committee. You know, a lot of good feedback from them. One, you know, small change we were making to the budget and the forecast is we are going to start budgeting small amount for capacity charges, about $29,000 a year for two connections, you know, in SRSD, two in RVSD, and one in SD5. We hadn't budgeted for capacity charges for many, many years based on some direction from the Finance Committee a while back. But we think that, you know, having just five connections is appropriate placeholder, at least, for that revenue account. Then we did receive $185,000 in capacity charges this current year. That's as of, you know, last week. And, you know, I didn't have this updated number because I didn't have the financial forecast. But it's about, you know, it's several hundred thousand dollars, which is more than we were projecting last year this time when we looked at the financial forecast. And the 10-year CIP is $36.23 million. I didn't have that number either. I'll have that in June.
I guess I better come in June, huh?
Well, yeah, you can come in June. We're having cake.
We're having cake. That's right. Cake.
On the revenue side, so we're, as you know, we're in year five of our adopted five-year revenue plan. So that's a 4% increase for operational revenue and 100% in $100,000 in the capital fee. That's been communicated to members years ago, and they built that into their own revenue projections and their rates for their properties. The regional charges allocated amongst the members and also San Quentin based on three-year flow and strength information that's tracked by our laboratory staff. Let's see here, investment earnings are still low, even though they've been increasing. We've increased our budget assumption from, you know, 30 basis points to 60 basis points. And under the contract service revenue, the treatment fee under San Quentin's contract is reduced because their flow and strength has decreased since last year. So last year it was 5.16 over the total. This year it's only 3.6. So there's a couple hundred thousand dollars in reduced revenue from San Quentin.
Population's down.
They are reducing the number of inmates. The lower security inmates have been transferred out. And then, of course, debt service to the members, that's now allocated based on the average of the prior 10-year EDU count. And that was, you know, we amended the payment for treatment services agreement, which was one of the bond documents, you know, last year around this time, and all the member agency boards approved that amendment, and they approved an MOU which set the allocation based on the 10-year average EDU count. That was from fiscal year 7 through, I think, fiscal year 16. So here's just the revenues. I won't go through all this, but revenues are increasing about 2.3%, so we're looking at about $17.6 million in all the different revenue sources. So here's the reduction of the contract services. That's primarily driven by the San Quentin treatment fee. Program services are a little less, and that's driven by the safety director, well, the health and safety program we have with the Novato Sanitary District. Now we have a health and safety manager instead of a director, so there's a salary savings there, so the reimbursement amount for that program from Novato Sands less than it was last year, so that's why there's a 5% reduction there. Expenses, so operating expenses overall are down by 2%. And there's a lot of factors, you know, that impact operating expenses. Here's just some of them here. In our agreements with the employee groups, there is a 2% cost of living adjustment this year. We have 21 employees eligible for step increases based on their performance and their favorable evaluations by their supervisors. We have several new employees. Some are at lower salary ranges than prior employees, and most of the new employees are at the beginning of their salary steps, which, you know, results in savings. Benefit costs are kind of remaining flat. We do have some reduced chemical usage and chemical unit costs, which result overall in reduced chemical costs. These projections this year, we have a lower natural gas procurement volume just because of the increased biogas we're producing through the organic waste receiving program. We do have reduced consulting services. We have allowances in various departments, and we reduced some of those for the upcoming year. And then there's annual 2016 CPI adjustments for a lot of our various contracts we have with outside service providers, which were reflected in there. But good overall, down 2%. Then here's, you know, kind of, we have about, you know, 140 different, you know, accounts in the budget. They roll up into, you know, these categories. So here's what's happening in the categories. See, there's the 2.2% reduction there. Under the CIP, so we have a group of employees that sit on a CIP team, and they're the ones that update the CIP annually. They determine the way the project's going to be delivered, the scheduling for the project delivery, providing the monthly financial report to all agency staff on the status of these various activities, and also the quarterly budget report. So in their standard process during the development of the budget is they take a look at what we're currently doing, there's some carryover funds, what things we didn't do, we think we're going to do those next year, not do those, or in our years. Then take a look at all of the major projects in the CIP, make a determination, are we still going to implement those for the planned years? If not, reasons why, shift things around if needed. And based on various factors, as listed here, but in particular condition assessments of equipment, we'll update schedules of when we're replacing tanks and pumps and gates and major assets. And this is the CIPs, it's a pretty big document. There's a lot of different, categories, individual projects, but they roll up into these areas. So this are the amounts rolled up into these categories in the budget and the number of activities in each category. So this year it's about $3.8 million we're planning to spend. And in terms of funding CIP, there's a sequence how we fund it. First, it's any capacity charges we receive. Those are first in, first out, so we use those first. Then the coverage, the debt service coverage we receive from the members from the prior year, we have a restricted reserve account for those. So those are the second capital funding source. Then we draw from our unrestricted capital reserve. And that has several different funding sources. And then here's just a snapshot of some of the larger projects that we're planning, for next year. You're familiar with the maintenance facility modification project that's currently under construction, so that got wrapped up this year. We're also, making ventilation improvements to various rooms and, load bays in our solids handling building. That's under construction, should be wrapped up in the next few months. The master plan, we're about halfway, about a third completed with that. There'll be the consultants start work on in these various areas. One, like we talked about, was the utilization of additional biogas from the available capacity in the digesters and expansion of organic waste receiving facility. It has a 20,000 gallon tank now. If we wanted to receive more liquid organic waste, we'd need another tank to receive that. Then all the interconnection agreement activities. And then if you notice along Anderson Drive, there's some major landslides on that hill. And so we're going to need to...
Who's coordinating the FEMA?
Our Brian. So, we talked with FEMA and we're waiting
and
for
who's
them.
Is there a county FEMA coordinator too?
We tried to partner up with the county, but the way that FEMA is making it do is each individual agency has to submit for the landslides or any damage that occurred on their property. So, our partnership kind of fell apart at the end, and now we all had to submit our own individual ones.
Yeah, so we've done that, and now we're waiting to hear a response from FEMA, which I understand the next step is to have some kind of a meeting with them so they can take a look at, our request in the hillside landslides. Financial forecast, I don't really have any figures for you, but this is some of the assumptions in it that we have, revenue increase that we talked about for the last year, the adopted revenue plan. That's, of course, built into there. We've included, the minor capacity charge revenues of $29,000 in there in the low interest room that we talked about. We do have the employee compensation adjustments, which are, based on what's in the MOU and the unrepresented employee, contract. We don't have any future revenues built in for power delivery yet, and don't have any increased tipping fees for the organic waste program. Mm-hmm. And that's about it there. So next for us internally is to, if you guys have any, questions, respond to those, any adjustments or changes you'd like to make, we'll definitely consider those and make those. I'll bring that updated 10-year financial forecast, to the meeting to show you, and then bring the final proposed budget to the meeting.
Our contract with Marin Sanitary Services, does it give a lead time for negotiating Do we have a contract renewal coming up? What, if we wanted
do.
To increase tipping, would that be the time it would come up?
Yes.
And what's the lead for that?
I mean, the contract, extended the duration of the contract through the end of September. So we'll start work on that pretty soon, looking at the terms and conditions of the contract.
Okay. The local jurisdictions had their increases that pertain to the operating costs of marine sanitary services. So their capture has now been set for this year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We get our lights back on? Hold on a second, Tom.
There's only 10 minutes. So.
Jason, we've got a $36 million CIP, and have you got any indications yet of how much more CIP we're going to get from the master plan? Have there been any tech memos in?
Well, there's a tech memo that has recommendations and even a prioritized CIP based on condition assessments.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of projects that are bundled together. There's a lot of activities bundled together into bigger projects. And, you know, if you add them all up and we do them all, there's a big price tag.
Yeah.
Tens of millions. But, you know, we still need to, you know, work with Kroll to finalize that TM. Then our CIP team, as well as myself, need to take a look at that and make a determination which ones, you know, do we even need to do in the next 10 years, which ones are high priority. And they did do a risk-based priority analysis based on consequence of failure and probability of failure of equipment. So that was great to have that. But this is something that we've been bringing to the Finance Committee because this fall we'll have to start working on the development of the next multi-year revenue plan. Mm-hmm. And a big piece of that is providing funding for the CIP and then looking at staff recommendations on what we include in the new CIP based on the master plan tech memo. Then there's a lot of other things that are a little more discretionary, like if we want, you know, solar power facilities, if we expand the organic waste program, you know, if we want to put in a more efficient, you know, generator, you know, in the cogeneration facility. Things that we don't have to do, but they'd be worthwhile, you know, given, you know, some of the items in our strategic business plan for the agency.
Dean, you got a question?
No.
Mary Beth?
Nope.
Got a comment? No? No comments or direction? Golly.
See you in June.
See you in June.
See you in June.
And you're going to send us some stuff in the middle, right?
Definitely.
Wait a minute.
We got North Bay Watershed. And
oh, no. We are. No. I've not.
Oh. I thought you were adjourning.
No, I did not say that.
Heavens.
No, I was just ending item number 13 so that we can move on to item 14.
Okay.
Mr. Borstein.
Anyway, of all the NBWA.
Wait, let's wait on everybody to begin.
Sorry.
No, the last North Bay Watershed Association meeting was really good. It had to do with the what the different agencies around here are doing with salmon. The salmon studies what's happening in all of our creeks. And it's really amazing. So first was the Lagunitas Creek, which is Marin Municipal Water District, and their scientists got up and talked, and were having more steelhead than they've seen in a very long time, and they're doing all sorts of work, especially with the Giacomini Preserve at the head of Tamales Bay. There, it's really, really helping. The salmon populations are coming back up significantly, not where they were in the 70s, but really very, very good. And the Napa, the Sonoma watershed, same kinds of things. And the Napa watershed also, they're seeing their fish populations come back dramatically. Fish that they thought were extinct are miraculously coming back. One of the difficulties is that those different creeks and tributaries are going through private lands. And so when they want to do anything in those tributaries and creeks, the regulatory commissions it's painful to work with them. And the landowners and getting everything straight, and it makes landowners not want to work with them. So there's an organization now that's funded partially by the North Bay Watershed Association that goes in for free, offers legal advice, and helps the landowners and ranchers and all that stuff to build different log dams and things like that. And so we voted to fund them. It was in the budget, and so we voted to fund them. And just a couple other quick things. They have, to do these studies, they have little tracking devices the size of a grain of rice. And they catch the baby salmon, and they put it up into their belly. It doesn't hurt them. They think, what do they know? They didn't ask the salmon. But anyway, it's their way of being able to track then the salmon as they go out and come back in. They have fish readers. And they can see what the salmon are doing over the course of their lifetime of 3 to 5 years. They're even seeing coho salmon coming back, which they thought were completely extinct here. And on July the 7th, the North Bay Watershed Association, I suggested that they come here and hold their meeting. And Jason is going to do a tour of the facilities and the biogen.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
You might want to come to that on the 7th. I was at Mike McGuire's office today, and I suggested that he might want to show up to that and just meet the whole group and see what's going on here.
Great.
May I ask a quick question
sure.
about that? Will it be in this room? Because it's a big group.
No.
It's not that big a group.
No, you could fit them all in.
It'll fit.
You could fit them.
Yeah.
You might have to get a few extra chairs back there. It'd be a little cramped.
Okay.
But
yeah, this is a smaller meeting room than the Nevada Sam has. But
yeah. We'll make sure they have snacks for them. Let me give them the presentation that I always give the incoming Marin County Civil Grand Jury about wastewater business in the county.
Well, they come with their bagels and,
they do come with
and
their
cream cheese and
coffee,
salmon
right?
spread
yeah.
and coffee.
That's
right,
Julie said that.
Yeah.
She's going to bring all that.
Yeah. So that's the traditional start. Well, you know, when I was participating in North Bay Watershed, we had a visit from a group from the NOLO, kind of like I envision it around the NOLO bypass area, and they actually came. I have a photograph of a bag of rice, and they were doing a salmon project in the working with the rice farmers, and they had pens where they were having the planted salmon and monitoring all these different things. And what they discovered is sort of like this took a lot of scientists how long to figure this out, but it became a feeding frenzy for the pelicans and so they had to kind of figure out a different form of pen to use. But anyway, the rice bag has the salmon on it and the participant. I mean, unfortunately, he didn't have a way for us to, like, I would have bought a bag of that rice. And it's very exciting because it was like a salmon rice project thing.
Well, the scientists are becoming so familiar with the individual salmon and the interesting things which they do. They go on little explorations up the tributaries, and then they come back, report back to the mothership. I don't know. But
salmon.
They name them. They're giving them names.
That's the beginning of the end.
The life cycle.
You can't eat it if it's got a name. All right. Thank you.
And if we're moving on to the next one, something which I have been told that I would like to consider for future agendas.
All right.
Is we have a lovely piece of property over in Larkspur Landing, which we're going to do the EPA remediation on it, hopefully very soon. And then I'm going to use the right word. We're going to somehow dispose of that property in one way or another. I have no idea what that means, but we currently occupy about 2 acres of that property for our operations, our trucks, our meeting rooms down there. They're in mud.
You have a meeting room there?
Yeah, our guys meet on Friday mornings.
Staff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The operational.
You still have your building in San Rafael.
Oh, yes. And that'll be there for a while. But at any rate, it's likely we're going to have to find a new home, or the possibility of a new home. We could stay there, but some of us believe that that's a silly kind of thing to occupy probably the two most expensive acres of property on the bay right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have been discussing with Jason, with Greg, the possibility of at one time before all the bad stuff happened, we were right over there in the back lot here. And we had our trucks here, and we had some portable facilities. And so we've opened up the idea of maybe moving back again.
Some discussions.
Right. So co-location.
For future discussions. I mean, our guy, even if we were to stay there, every morning our guys are going to have to get in their trucks, come over here, fill them up with the reusable water, and then go off. So it makes the most sense for us to be here and pay some kind of rent, which would then be...
I'll put this on a future agenda.
I would like it on a
future agenda. All right. Thank you.
Okay, so I have a handout. If you guys have any questions, you can call me about that. But I do have a present for you. And this is advanced treated wastewater from the Orange County Water District.
Oh!
So they have a partnership with the Orange County Sanitation District where they receive 100 million gallons of secondary treated wastewater, and they run it through a bunch of additional treatments, and they produce this water here. Michael's already sampled it.
And
it's
all good
here.
I'm not dead yet.
All right. Well, thank you.
And this is used for their groundwater replenishment system. So they send about 70 of the 100 million, 30 miles to the east, and they spread it over these circulation pond or basins. It trickles into the aquifer, and then they remove the water from the aquifer downstream and treat it and put it in their distribution system. So I was at the CASA public policy forum, and there was a reception by the water district, the sand district, and they...
It's the first bottling in the Western Hemisphere, limited edition 2017. Not for sale, but it's sample water.
So they are
vintage
actually...
2017.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's good.
So what they are injecting back into
the
groundwater is literally this clean enough to drink.
Yeah, that's
do they RO? Do they do RO?
Oh, it goes through probably, 7 or 8 different treatment processes.
Well, microfiltration, reverse osmosis, ultraviolet light, a seawater barrier, and then this buckle.
Is that Water Factory 51, or what do they call it?
This replaced the Water Factory 21.
What did you do with the bottle?
Yeah.
Okay, do I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
I'll accept it.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Will we be having a closed session before the June meeting?
Possibly. We'll be reporting out to SEIU board's decisions. We'll be meeting conferring on June 2nd. Maybe something to present to the board. I'll let you all know in advance.
All right.
Oh, I already took my numbers off.
If it's pretty quick, we could just have it, 15 minutes before the meeting, something like that.
Yeah, that would